has been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Thursday. It's the Thursday 10-5-2023 edition of the Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, and I'm here with Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst. We're off to a red start today after a decent day in the market yesterday. And I'm going to blame the initial jobless claims. You know, it's always good to point a finger of blame somewhere. And that jobs market just remains too resilient for the bond market stays. The Dow is down 49 right now to 33,080. It's doing better than the NASDAQ, which is down 99 right now, 0.75%. It's at 13,136. The S&P 500 is down 20 points, down 0.5% to 42.43. The small caps just barely down. Oil is down another $1.07 to 83.15. You know, it's down 10 bucks here in the last couple weeks per barrel. Just when you think there's no end to it, there is an end to it. Gold is down $1.90 to 18.33. The 10-year is down just 2 basis points after that better-than-expected initial jobless claims report. The 10-year is at 4.71%. So welcome to today's The Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, and I'm here with Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst and certified financial planner. Well, we had a breath of fresh air in the market yesterday, and boy, could we use it. I could really use it. It felt good. It's been a while since we've seen the sun shining on the market. The NASDAQ was up 177 yesterday. We're giving half of that up today, however, on this jobless claims report. The Dow was up 127 yesterday. The S&P 500 was up yesterday 34 points, so we had a really good day. I would call Tesla the stock of the day yesterday. I haven't looked into the market deeply enough today to declare a stock of the day, if there is one. I will be on the hunt for the asset class of the day, the stock of the day, the sector of the day, if there are any. Okay, Barry, this is where Barry weighs in. Initial jobless claims. What did you see there?
Well, it continues to surprise me on how much, number one, this number, how important, right, this number ends up, at least being from a market or a market volatility standpoint. Of course, it came in at 207,000. Expected was 210K. So, in other words, we had 3,000 less than expected. And the fact that 3,000 jobs, right, can have an effect on the market this much, right, is to me, yeah, is a little interesting, right? So it's kind of these different readings, we've continued to say create so much volatility around these numbers, and we're talking about 3,000 jobs,
yeah,
right, versus expectations. But it does show you. I mean, jobless claim, continuing claims, which I think is an important number, really came in pretty close to consensus as well. Not much difference. It'll be really interesting to see yesterday the ADP report was light, and the market, liked it. Of course, the ADP has really hadn't been the best gauge for a while now as of in terms of employment. And so we'll get the real non-farm payrolls tomorrow. And that's, that number, to me, should have a bigger effect than a week-to-week number.
Yes. If we get a big a lousy, like 150,000 jobs, or maybe you can look up what the expectation is so we can write that on a refrigerator magnet to know what to look for tomorrow. But that will impact the markets big time.
Yeah, 170K actually.
Oh, okay.
You hit it on the number. Yeah, 170K is expected. It was 187 in last employment report. So, and you know, folks, I believe they're thinking that we're going to have a bit of a lighter report. But I've heard terms that the quote unquote whisper number that that jobs are going to come in are expected to come in better than expected, which it kind of seems like a circular reference when you think about an Excel sheet. But
yes,
we'll see. In other words, we'll know that 170 is the number, and we'll see what happens. Right.
Well, it also the good initial jobless claims numbers also support the soft landing theory. Although this sudden rise in interest rates, we don't know what the fallout from that is yet, because it happened so quickly. And I'm sure it's going to impact a lot of companies out there that are in interest rate, furniture stores, auto dealers.
Regional banks. I've seen
regional
where there's
banks, home there's
more
builders.
Shorting. There's more shorting of regional banks right now currently than there was in March of this year. So do the math there. That's not, doesn't bode well. Right, at least for expectations for regional banking earnings when they start rolling out here soon.
Well, the trade deficit narrowed some more than expected in August. Does that
help us? It helps GDP.
GDP, right?
Yeah. So if you in terms of if you import more than you export, it actually ends up being a negative on GDP. And so if your trade balance narrows, meaning we're exporting a little bit more than maybe we had in the past, and importing maybe a little bit less, that number actually helps the GDP number, when you look at the formula. So,
yes. That, the recent bond sell-off is threatening hopes for a soft landing for the U.S. economy. It's not killing hopes, it's threatening hopes. Traders prepare for borrowing costs to remain higher for longer, while fears over the widening federal deficit continue to mount. As I look back, we really couldn't put our finger on anything as to why we had the sudden trashing of U.S. treasuries and the widespread selling. We don't know if it was a combination of things. We don't know if it was the U.S. government trimming their balance sheet. Would be a very likely candidate. Whether it was China or Japan unloading a bunch of bonds. But at the end of the day, it had a massive impact on the bond market. And it also, that fourth reason could be fear of the faith and good credit of the U.S. government, right? That had to be a wake-up call to see $33 trillion. And then another budget coming along, and $2 trillion more than what we take, and just no end in sight to adding to this $33 trillion in our deficit debt.
Right.
And I think that spooked investors in the U.S. It had to have, and then I think maybe.
And globally. And globally, right? Those people, other countries own our debt.
That's exactly
as well.
Right.
So, yeah.
And yesterday, maybe, I don't know, another theory one could have is that, the ousting of McCarthy, who went along, by the way, with the extension of the debt limit, and who went along with racking up to, he didn't really do much to stop it. Maybe the bond market rallied a little bit yesterday on hope that we'll get somebody coming in there. The last one to balance the budget, if I'm right, I think it was Newt Gingrich way back when.
Right.
And now, there has been very little.
What was it? Was it
will?
What did they call it? It wasn't the New Deal. It was some kind of one of those. Obviously, the New Deal was back in Roosevelt.
Right.
But,
yeah,
I'll remember it in a minute.
I'll think of it in a minute.
Contract with America.
Maybe somebody stronger. Although there's a lot of pain. Okay, that's why they avoid bringing up the subject of Medicare, raising the age on Social Security. Because if you do the math, those things are going to continue to drain and be non-supportive at some point in time down the road. Now, the budget office is continually telling us, we're good for another 10 years. But we keep kicking the can down the road, and nobody wants to approach it because there would be a heck of a lot of pain
and it's
and
an
a
election
lot of
year.
Backlash.
Yeah, kind of hard to cut, and you know, when you're moving into an election year. I will say one silver lining is the recent U.S. downgrade actually included or actually took into account the chance of all of this turmoil that's happening. They knew that the speaker, they knew the speaker was weak, that there was a chance, that could get ousted at any particular moment in time or at least have a vote to do so. And so that downgrade actually included all of the turmoil we're seeing
that's
now.
Right.
So it was already built into
the
cake.
Well, when we come back, I got to mention the breadth of the market, which is hitting a 52-week low for me on my B-plus or better stocks. And Jeffrey Gundlach says to buckle up as the yield curve is rapidly de-inverting. Now, Barry, I want you to explain the impact of a de-inverting when we come back. This is the Best Stocks Now show. And welcome back to the second quarter of today's Best Stock Show. Not much has happened since we started here. The S&P or the Nasdaq is down 100 right now. It's up 175 yesterday, and I'm going to blame the weekly initial jobless claims. Now tomorrow, like Barry said, that's going to be way more of a market mover. When those jobs numbers come out, if you get weak numbers under that 187,000, like you get 80 or 90,000, that's going to be really bullish for the market. If you come in about, where it's expected, I think that would be pretty neutral for the market. And if you come in at 350,000, look out because interest rates are going to shoot probably over 5% or somewhere in that territory. So all eyes tomorrow, that'll be at 8:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Now, this breadth of the market, that's the old advanced decline line. You know, we used to watch that a lot, how many issues are advancing versus how many are declining. Man, it's been horrible. It has just been horrible since July. There has just been a plunge in the breadth of the market. Which basically is the advanced decline line. I'm down to 153 B-plus or better stocks. That's a 52-week low. I'm looking back in August. We were at 300, 350, around in there, and now we're clear down to 153. Now, that could mean two things. An oscillator is one way to look at the market. You know, an oscillator shows when something is way overdone or way overbought or oversold. And you could say that the market is basically washed out all of the sellers by now. That's one way to look at it. But obviously there's just not a lot of interest in equities right now. There's not a lot of buyers out there. There's not a lot of bids out there right now. Instead, there's a lot of sales going on, and that's while interest rates go higher. But you could also say the same thing about the bond market. You could say it's way oversold at this point in time, and it's due for a comeback. I haven't seen any signs of like total capitulation or a massive bear market around the corner. I think we got to get into earnings season before we can make that judgment.
And we haven't seen it as much on the corporate bond side. I mean,
not at all.
Our bond portfolio. I mean, we've made one purchase during this run up in treasuries, and your kind of normal thinking would be okay. Treasuries are going up, then of course everything else yield should be going up, right? For every other part of the bond space, and really the two sides that have been hit the most are U.S. Treasuries and in high yield or junk debt, right? And
yeah.
So, your corporate bond rates have gone up, and we've seen a few deals. But if you just woke up and looked at the U.S. 10-year, and then you would think, oh, there's got to be some great yield to worst and great purchases on the corporate bond side, and we just haven't hadn't been a as much of a glaring buy signal when it comes to corporate bonds.
Here's what I'm going to say about that. The credit of Amazon, the credit of all these companies, corporations, way better than the credit of the U.S. These companies, these publicly traded companies, don't amass big. They couldn't. They couldn't run it.
Who could run a $33 trillion deficit?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And racking up and adding to it, I mean, pretty soon you're gone. Nobody's going to lend to you, you know, were it not for, you know, it's the U.S. government and other countries, you know, borrow our or lend money to us. It'd be a totally different ballgame. So, yeah, that's what that tells me. The corporations are run by sharper people, more capable, and who are out looking for their shareholders, right? And doing what's right.
Well, and required to.
And that's responsible.
And required to. We always joke around, right, in terms of the political spectrum. If you're not lying, you're not trying, right? The difference is on the CEO side, right, especially since Sarbanes-Oxley and the Enron debacle. If CEOs or executives knowingly, right, lie or don't tell the whole picture, those folks go to jail or get fined or both nowadays.
Well, and they're
right?
constantly, corporations are constantly being fined by regulators. They ought to look at their own house, right? That is a total mess. Total irresponsible.
Correct.
For year after year after year. And we get lied to so that they can get reelected. Jeffrey Gundlach. Okay, now this, I've never heard this before, but it's true. Okay, we were at 108 yield curve,
huge.
And it's narrowed to 35. To me, that says there's a lesser chance of a recession. But he says that this should put everyone on recession warning. And he said, not just recession warning, but recession watch. And he says, if the unemployment rate ticks up just a couple of tenths, it will be recession alert. Well, Gundlach has been wrong a lot.
When he's a bond guy, and so
he's a bond guy,
as a bond person, just remember, who you're hearing from, right? And, bonds do tend to do better when gloom and doom, right? Which means, at some point, right, the Fed, gloom and doom means the Fed is going to have to lower rates at some point, which helps bonds. So if you're, quote unquote, talking your book, right, which side of that equation are you on? Well, he wants some gloom and doom, so then interest rates can be taken down by the Fed, which helps his investors and his bond portfolios.
Yeah. I don't quite understand the thinking between the narrowing of, other than it's just such a sudden move, right?
Yeah, and what it is, really, it's cost of long-term capital, right, becomes more expensive. So the where we have, where you always hear a negative inverted yield curve just means short-term rates are higher than long-term rates. So you can borrow cheaper long-term than you can short-term, which, helps long-term investment. You reverse, once you start reversing that, well, it makes long-term investment more expensive, which turn can, have less investment can lead to recession, right?
So that's right. Okay, so anyways, he's on alert. Now, the other thing, I've made two things have to happen for the market to start moving back up again and focusing on earnings as opposed to interest rates. One would have to be that oil prices would have to start dropping. Well, boy, I'll tell you what, my prayers were answered there. 93 down to 83, just like
yeah.
that, okay?
And that piece of the article certainly held well. In
That's
the thesis,
bullish.
Right?
That's
exactly
a bullish because it was impacting the inflation expectations.
PPI.
It was taking money out of consumers' pockets. So that's one thing. Now the other shoe that has to drop, and it started yesterday, let's hope that was the beginning of it, is interest rates have to drop. And then the market can focus on earnings once again, which, in my article in Seeking Alpha yesterday, I pointed out oil prices, I pointed out interest rates, and I pointed out the graph of earnings expectations, okay? And at the bottom line there is eventually the market's going to come around and focus on those earnings expectations. when these other two elements, oil prices and interest rates, solidify and stabilize. We'll be right back.
This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show.
And welcome back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, one of the themes I see to all of this fossil fuel and global warming is just move it to other parts of the world, right? Noble Corp, which is a major driller, the CEO sees the Biden plan pushing offshore drillers away from the United States. Go ahead. Drill in Brazil, you know, drill in West Africa, but stay out of the U.S. Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah, even drill off the coast of Venezuela.
Yes. Noble Corp is the world's largest offshore oil rig contractor. By the way, I don't know if they have an Airbnb for oil rigs. You know what an oil rig is? Let's see. The cost to rent one of Noble Corp's advanced offshore drilling rigs averages $420,000 a day.
A day, huh?
I hope that comes with room service, you know, and drop a helicopter, drop in some Chipotle burritos or whatever.
You get a discount whenever there's a hurricane and you got to stop for a few days?
Yeah, I mean, 400. Now, he says if we need the barrels, they're going to get drilled somewhere. And if it's not going to be here, it's going to be somewhere else. Adding that Brazil and Mexico would lead the world in growth as activity in the U.S. Gulf of Mexico stays flat. The Biden administration unveiled plans last week to hold just 3 auctions for offshore drilling rights over the next 5 years. That's the fewest number of oil and gas lease sales ever offered in a 5-year plan by the U.S. Prices to rent the most advanced $420,000, which has created a tight supply in floating rigs, which are now 87% rented. And they expect that day rate to go up to $500,000. Now, here's your weird stock of the day. I don't know if I buy this or not, but Walmart said it. And if Walmart is saying it, I guess, you know, it must be true.
They could make it true, yeah.
Yeah, the retail sector received a bit of a jolt on Wednesday when Walmart pointed to the weight loss drugs as a factor in a slight pullback in terms of items purchased and total calories represented in the purchases. In other words, people are walking down the potato chip aisle, you know, going, they don't have the desire. Yeah. Walmart U.S. Chief John Furner said the company will look at the issue and find ways to mitigate it if necessary in terms of assortment. Well, I don't know. I mean, how do you mitigate somebody who has no appetite whatsoever?
Well, if you're not hungry, you're not going to buy the, you know, 50 calorie thing or the $1,000 calorie thing. To me, my other argument would be, wouldn't clothes sales go up because you need to replace your wardrobe?
Well, you would think too that Burger King and McDonald's and Kentucky Fried Chicken and Domino's Pizza. Analysts estimate that nearly 7% of the U.S. population could be on weight loss drugs by 2035. Man, I'm telling you what, how can you not own the weight loss drugs? There's only two of them right now. It's Lilly and it's Novo Nordisk.
And Lilly just made a purchase of a big purchase on the cancer drug side.
Yep.
Right? They're a well diversified, good or bad, they're a well diversified drug company, and they've been they've made some strong strides and focused on the cancer side, and actually just purchased a small biotech, I think yesterday or the day before yesterday.
So. Yes. Well, I mean, if this was true, 7% of the population, that would lead to a 30% cut in calorie intake. So anyways, I mean, that's amazing that that is now showing up.
And if we can get Medicare costs, right, if we can get health care costs down, right, then maybe that's, you know, one place on the budget side, at least you could make some headway that might have been unplanned initially before some of these drugs.
I see a great benefit to society if this all plays out the way it's going right now. J.P. Morgan, now where have we heard this before? Okay, they've got to raise their capital. They're faced with regulatory proposals to boost large banks' required capital. They're going to increase the pace of securitizing billions of dollars of its loan portfolio. This is what was done in 07. Here's another comparison to 07. Remember they started packaging those mortgage loans? And many of them were full of toxic waste material.
Yeah, packaging them in terribly because they weren't diversified. It's like you had one whole swath of one of these mortgage-backed securities, and all of it was, say, around Las Vegas, right, which was, you know, very economically sensitive.
And then they took them to the credit agencies and got AAA credit on them, and they blew up, and that was probably the number one factor in the 08. And now here you've got J.P. Morgan packaging up, pooling their loans and selling them as interest-bearing tradable securities. That's J.P. Morgan. Ford announces more layoffs because of the didn't show up in today's weekly jobless claim. GM has put the cost so far at $200 million. They had to go out and secure a $6 billion revolving credit facility from that same J.P. Morgan. So it's not good. 1,300 employees are now out of work at Ford due to the strike, and it's costing them a lot of money. And in the meantime, I would say Tesla is the number one beneficiary of all of this. Rivian Automotive plans for another $1.5 billion in senior notes. But they're adding a twist. They're green. The notes are green, which ought to get, maybe the California Teachers Union will buy them, or the New York Teachers Union will buy them. But that's a lot of debt hanging around the neck of Rivian, and especially when they're losing $33,000 on every truck they produce.
And go back to the Tesla playbook if you want to read back in mid 2010s, right? That's what that's what Elon had to do, right, to get this thing to get Tesla where it is today. And there was a couple of times along the way where it was touch and go if he was going to be able to get that next quote unquote round of funding. And so I doubt we're going to be in the market for those convertible notes, but the trick is you got to keep that funding going until you get enough production. And interest rates were a lot better when Elon was doing it in the mid 2010s than the interest rates currently.
And eventually the money dries up. We're saying we're not going to loan you money anymore. It's similar to the United States. We don't trust you anymore. Your credit, I don't know. You're not running a very tight ship. Now, the 10 most shorted stocks in the market right now. This is always fun. Number 10, Beyond Meat, 38% short interest. Number 8, AI, which is the AI stock, 40%. Carvana, it's always on that list, 44%. Fisker, which is, way down below Tesla, Rivian, Lucid.
Price point is huge.
Then there's
expensive
Fisker.
Car.
The odds are enormous of Fisker ever being profitable. They went belly up on their first try. Short interest, 44%. Bowlero number two, which is buying up bowling alleys across.
Yeah, and that's Bowlero, not Valero.
No, 62% short interest, and Bicycle Therapeutics 240%. I didn't know that was possible.
How can you? I don't even want to know how that's possible. By the
no.
way.
Okay, and then
it's reverse leverage. That's reverse
regulators leverage. All over the world continue to go after Amazon, Microsoft, Google. It's a nice little ATM machine. Amazon and Microsoft are in the crosshairs of the UK's antitrust agency after it launched an inquiry into the cloud services market on Wednesday to study competition concerns. Well, okay, that... Just pay a few billion, and we'll let you go on. That seems to be how that works. And then the last one here, and then way down at the bottom of the food chain, this Vietnamese electric car maker went to $93 a share a month ago.
Oh, that's the one that recently they went. Wasn't that the one that recently came out as an IPO?
Yes, and it had a bigger market cap than like all of them combined, except for Tesla. It's gone from 93 back to 8. 93 down to 8, even though they report over 10,000 EV deliveries for Q3. The stock has just been absolutely pounded. Well, we'll take a look inside the market, see if we can find a few clues out there underneath the surface when we come back. Welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. Just a reminder, October 17th and 18th and 19th at the Kingsley in Bloomfield Hills, Michigan, home of the Detroit Red Wings. We'll be playing the Penguins during that little homestand there. Hopefully we'll catch a game, but we'll be there. Rare opportunity to meet with myself and Barry. If you would like to make a reservation, 855-611-BEST to talk with us, 855-611-BEST. Or if you'd like to just talk to us over the phone via Zoom, again, 855-611-BEST. I'll be working on the newsletter. Kind of I begin towards the end of the day after I've seen another 500 charts or so. And start putting my thoughts together for the weekend. The newsletter will go out on Saturday with my current take, my macro outlook for the market. That's very critical. And really, earnings watch. We now go on to earnings watch, as I want to say. Let's just take a look. When does J.P. Morgan report? J.P. Morgan will report their earnings on 10/13. That's next Friday. So next week is the beginning of earnings season, and I'm just hoping that that moves the focus away from interest rates and oil prices, and we could focus on what's also very important, our earnings, because it's math, all right? That takes the emotion out when it's raw numbers and math. So anyways, to get 2 free weeks of the newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. Okay, as I look at the markets and underneath the surface, not seeing much at all, seeing pretty lousy breadth in the market. There's only one big winner in the market today. It's a biotech that's being bought out, Orchard Therapeutics, a company I'd never heard of until today. Well, I've heard of it, but I didn't know that much about it. Gene therapy is what they do, which not much has come from that yet, but there's a lot of hope there in those gene therapy companies.
Does that involve Levi's, or are we different genes?
Yeah, no, not blue jeans, the kind that make up DNA-type stuff.
Gotcha.
That make up who you and I are. Orchard Therapeutics being bought out, stock up 96% today. How did we miss that one? The Dow's up. Or Travelers is up, the biggest winner in the Dow. It's an insurance company. They benefit from higher rates. One, they're making a lot of money on their short-term holdings. It's up 1.2, but it has not been a very good performer. But I do like the insurance stocks in this environment, even though they're not all that exciting. Johnson & Johnson got an upgrade. They're up a little bit. That's about as flat a chart as you're going to see. Chevron's up a little bit. Maybe they think, maybe the investors in the oil stocks think that the fall in oil could be over. That's a volatile market, let me tell you. It went from 93 to 83. So a couple oil stocks are up today. United Healthcare, which continues to threaten to break out to the upside. Look at that. It's just threatening to break out to the upside. It kind of did a little bit today. It pulled back. It's definitely one worth watching. It's up about 1%, a little under 1% today. Then on the downside, Coca-Cola, for whatever reason, maybe it's this Walmart story, I don't know. Coca-Cola, wow, that's an ugly chart on Coca-Cola, really ugly. That's a consumer staple, down 2.7%. Its big rival, Pepsi, also an ugly chart. There might be news specific to one of these companies.
And Constellation Brands, I think, is down today, too. I mean, so it could be, like you
the
said,
the beverage market.
Reduced appetites. I don't know if that means you're not drinking as much. Satiation of everything, right? I think you mentioned that. You may not want anything.
I don't know. Pepsi is getting clocked, and Coca-Cola. Those are both very poor charts. And then over at the S&P 500, Kohl's. I think it's on Bed Bath & Beyond watch. If it breaks 18, I'm surprised it's not one of the most heavily shorted stocks. The only thing that saves it is it's making money still. It's profitable, but their sales are dropping. Kohl's is down 4.4% today, down to $19.34. This was once an $83 stock. Also on the downside, Clorox. What the heck is going on with the consumer staples today? That's a horrible chart on Clorox. CLX. Well, man, they must have something to do. There must be something going on there, some kind of news. I'm just going to look that up real quickly. We used to have at our church one of the CEOs of Clorox over the years attended our church. He was a smart guy, let me tell you. Clorox is down almost 9% today. They had a cybersecurity attack. Okay, all right. There's what it is, a cybersecurity attack.
Clorox had a cybersecurity. Just pour some bleach on it, right?
Wow,
that cleans up everything.
Yes, they could bleach their hard drive. Anyways, that's where we're at in the markets today. I think the market is waiting for tomorrow's earnings jobs report. It's always something. Look, if it's not the jobs report, it's the CPI report. It's the PPI report. It's the PCE report. It's the initial jobless claims. It's the oil inventories. We just go from event to event. I watch it all because it does have a big impact on where the money goes, where the money flows, and where it doesn't flow, and where the money leaves. And you got to strive to be in the right areas. There's just certain areas of the market you don't want to have any exposure to at all. Right. Real estate would come to mind, the REITs, and anything interest rate sensitive like the mortgage REITs and the high dividend paying stocks, etc. And while that continues to dominate the headlines on Seeking Alpha, that's the most dangerous place to be right now. That's just me, my observation. From 22 years of experience watching the markets. Okay, again, the newsletter, GundersonCapital.com. Get 2 free weeks. I sum up all my observations and thoughts from a week of being entrenched fully immersed in the market up to my eyeballs every single day, and I sum it all up in my newsletter every Saturday, GundersonCapital.com. Or to speak to us about a little bit more active management than maybe you're getting and where you're at, 855-611-BEST. 855-611-BEST. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Ameritrade. Ameritrade is a member of SIPC and FINRA.